Welcome to the debrief. I'm here. I'm here at the BT Tower in London, about to see Tim Ross and Kit Warhurst do a show at the British Telecom Tower, which you may know as the tower that the goodies that the kitten pushed over. So they're just getting the crowd coming in now. It's pretty exciting. I believe that because it's such an amazing place, people are just here to be part of the tower. They don't actually know who these guys are. Kit, what can we expect tonight, mate? What can we expect?
Some musical brilliance, Dave.
Yes. Well, yeah. You did do the theme song to this podcast.
Yeah.
So that's
you've already got it straight away because I presume it played at it'll play at the start.
Yeah, we just played it.
I love it. Yeah.
Oh my god! I gotta go sit down. It's getting dark.
Better get
in
your
here.
Seat, buddy. Yeah. Are we in the right club?
Yeah. It's a bit weird. All right. Exciting.
Hello. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the BT Tower. I'm Tim Ross, and Kit will get up in a second. You'll work out what's happening. I know there's plenty of you have come along going, I don't even know what this is. We've just come for the view, and then we've taken it away. This is the fourth year of us doing this show here, and it's always a pleasure.
Hey, this is Dave O'Neill.
And Glenn Robbins.
And we do a podcast called Somehow Related.
And we talk about two random topics that you wouldn't think were related, but in actual fact, they are.
Yes, it's a great podcast. We love it. We listen to it ourselves.
Come along, join in. Don't bet, don't gamble, but
don't
learn
Google.
Something. And if you go to a dinner party, you've got a perfect way to start a conversation.
So many facts to bore people with on this podcast. Tune in, Somehow Related. Dave O'Neill, I'm back on the debrief here with Kit Warhurst and Tim Ross, and I just watched their show. It's fantastic. We're sitting here in the BT Tower, guys. Congratulations on the show.
That was a great intro.
Yeah,
that was good. That was like Osso Bucco standard.
Oh man, Osso Bucco. That's a reference to a long forgotten show, Kit, from Triple R days.
Yeah, Kit remembers it too. That was a great reset too, by the way.
Because, of course, me and Rosso met at Triple R.
We did back in the
because
day.
Because you used to know Jane Gazzo.
Yeah.
And this is how I first met Rosso. Occasionally I would do I would be a guest person on Jane Gazzo's late night 80s show. She did an 80s show on Triple R.
Yeah.
And I would do a DJ character or just go in and sort of co-host and play 80s songs because... Unlike her, I was there in the 80s. I was right there. And she goes, we're going to have Brian Mannix ringing in from the Uncanny X-Men. I'm like, wow, Brian Mannix. The real Brian Mannix. And she goes, yeah, it's the real Brian Mannix. Anyway, the phone rings and she picks it up. This is during a song. She goes, I told you to ring a bit later, you idiot. And she hangs up and I go, who was that? And she goes, oh, that was Brian Mannix. I'm like, I'm thinking, she's speaking to Brian Mannix like that. And of course... Then it was Rosso, because you do a very good Brian Mannix impression.
Well, everyone's got a skill, haven't they? what occurs to me at the time, it wouldn't have been that hard to get him if you wanted
to get
him. Yeah,
I know, exactly. Because you used to get the guy from real life to come
in.
Send me an angel.
Yeah,
he used to come in and sit in the
studio.
How
are you, Janie? It's Brian from the Uncanny X-Men. Yeah. I was like, oh.
And so then you turned up at one of the shows. And, of course, I'd seen Black Rose, your band, the great band from the... Was it the 80s? Was it the 90s, do you reckon, Black Rose?
That was in the 90s? Definitely the 90s, mate.
Yeah, because you're younger than me.
Yeah, we are.
And, very much so. Yeah, very much so.
We're young,
yeah,
young, hip,
even though,
young, hip guys.
Yeah, because you guys were at uni 6 years ago, as you said in the show. Yeah. Even though I have to say that one of my favourite things about your show was your Spano Ballet story.
Mm.
Because apparently the mic you're using... The guy, the tech said, the last person who used that...
It was Tony Hadley from the band Spandau Ballet.
Yeah, that's exciting. See, that's exciting for me.
Yeah, see?
And because I saw Spandau Ballet too when they toured. In 87, maybe?
Yeah, it was
in
86 or 87, yeah.
Anyway, so that's where I first met Rosso.
Not at Spandau Ballet, but back when we were doing
it. Yeah, so I remember when you started comedy. It would have been the mid-90s. Would it be the mid-90s, 95, kind of? Because Black Rose were like a comedy band.
Yeah, we did 93, 94, I think, then. And probably did stand-up, 94, 95, maybe. You know?
Yeah.
Bit of that gear. Yeah, it was good.
Good times. And Kit, of course, I would have met you through your sister, Miff, because Kit's sister was on Spicks and Specks, of course. And I can't remember exactly where I met you, though. I don't know. It's not that this is important, but it's something I do on this podcast.
It is a bit of a shame that you can't remember where we first met, Dave. But the good news is, to make you feel better, I can't remember when we first met.
There you go.
I used to see you heaps doing stand-up because it was really great because Tim we were all share housing. We're all musicians, but Tim got into the comedy, and so we would just sort of go along with him to like all of his shows.
Yeah, yeah,
it was
yeah.
just we just it was.
We probably so got free silly. To get in and got some drinks too.
Yeah, and I needed someone to laugh.
Yeah, yeah. There's yeah. a bit of that, and a shoulder to cry on when you got off stage and you, maybe didn't think you went that well, but we would go to Elbow Grease a lot.
Yes, because our friend Jed Wood
also ran that, and we used to have we had a great time going along to those things.
That was a real classic mid-90s starting point.
Yeah.
I talked to a lot of comics that started in the mid-90s. Their first gig was often at Elbow Grease. Where was your first gig, Rosso? Like, so just doing stand-up.
I entered the comedy comp at La Trobe University.
Oh, yeah.
And won that. And then
who hosted that?
Anthony Morgan.
Oh, wow. God,
he was a turd, too.
Was he out of control? Or
no, he was funny enough, but I went to say hi to him. And he just...
He blanked you.
He brushed me, yeah. But then he brushed me 5 years later. He's actually brushed me his whole career.
At least he's consistent.
I know. Like, I think I stopped after a while. And I just won't even bother saying hi to Morgs. No. But I remember in the sort of early days of being in at Token Management in Fitzroy, and poor old Angus. Remember Angus?
Angus Bell.
Yeah, Angus used to... And Angus's job was to... drive Morgs to some shit gig in Bendigo at the university or something. What a shit gig.
Man, there were a lot more uni gigs back then, though.
There was a lot, and they were good, and then...
Well, they're good for us because we were young.
And then, but Morgs comes into the office and he's looking for something to drink, and he grabs two cans of warm beer off the shelf in Kevin White's office and gets in the Corolla with Angus. And off they go to somewhere. And went, oh, yeah. It blanked me that time, too. You know, the lure of the warm beer was...
Well, I drove to Warrnambool with him once to do a uni gig with Morgs. And because they chose me, because, of course, I don't really drink much. And Morgs said, on the way home, we've got a rule. If it's open, we have to stop. And so we stopped in all these, like, Terang or somewhere like that. And just, Geelong.
Kit wasn't there when we did. I don't know what happened, but we had a band. We had that Black Rose band, our band manager, Dave King. Out of nowhere, suddenly, and he managed a few little bands and used to book the Rochester Castle in Fitzroy. And out of nowhere, he started booking Ostentatious.
Oh, yeah, well, that's a nightmare.
And we played out, we did a support as Black Rose for Ostentatious. I'm kind of think it's a Village Green or something like
Frankston
that.
Or something?
No, it was, but anyway, and then he said, oh, we need to go to Warrnambool. Do you guys want to do support him in Warrnambool? And you were gigging with someone else and everyone else. So it was just Killer, our bass player, and I went down.
Were you in Black Rose?
Oh, yeah.
Are you the drummer?
I'm the drummer. That's how I started playing the drums.
Oh, wow. Okay, go on. Yeah, go on.
And,
didn't realise that.
And then so we, Killer and I, go down to Warrnambool to the pub down there. And we were supposed to support him and whatever. I don't know what we were going to do, but I don't think we'd worked it out. But no one was there, of course.
Yeah, no.
And Ostentatious has got some, you know, he's got some ring in, some like 84-year-old dude from the Jewish community to drive him down in the Mercedes.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
This poor guy's sitting there having a schnitzel at the bar. He's literally like 100. And Dawson Tosha goes, yeah, I know. He's fucking going after me. I'm going on first. And he gets up. He does Australiana, two cunts laughing. He gets in the Merc and goes home.
Yeah.
And so we've got to fill out the night. And so I get up and do some stand-up, nothing really happened, and then Killer and I do a couple of songs from the Black Rose, and then Killer picks up the guitar and plays, like, starts doing Pink Floyd covers for the next half hour.
They probably love it, though.
Oh, it was amazing.
Probably love it. I just remembered a Black Rose song, I Want to Get My Photo in Beat Magazine.
Oh, yeah, what a classic.
That's the one I can remember.
Big song, yeah, that's good.
I remember that.
Yeah, that was our reggae number.
Oh,
that was reggae number.
Yeah, that was... What really awful rendition attempt at reggae music.
Yeah. We should talk about the why you got into architecture and comedy. Because it's interesting because you've gone like a... You've taken a sideway... You basically left the traditional comedy circuit and you're doing shows now in architecturally significant places. Like we're here in the BT Tower, which is amazing. Which is actually... That's another favourite bit of your show when you put on the revolving, because it's a former revolving restaurant.
We turn it on after the show and then people come around. This is the fourth year of us doing it. But, you know, I suppose for Kit and I as friends, and we probably didn't realise that how much our friendship was of doing the show and how it became really important to us that we get to hang out. And he lives in Melbourne, I live in Sydney. And we travel a lot with this and we do really interesting shows. And I suppose the and we started doing shows in houses, and we do shows in houses quite a lot, and mostly because I can't fill the big venues anymore. And
yeah, but you're playing to a specific audience in a way. That's not true. You could do it.
No, it just it. I think the thing for me was, you know, after working with Meds for all those years, and we had a very specific act.
And so for people who don't know, Tim is Rosso from Merrick and Rosso. And you've got to remember
it's reset. He's very
It's years of radio. And you've got to, I've told you this before, but when I was doing comedy in the 90s, I would come home and my wife would go, "Oh, these guys, Merrick and Rosso," and then she would repeat, you know, she would repeat some of your Thingo Bro TAFE, what was it called? Choice Bro TAFE. Sketches or something that you've done. Must have been the Triple J days. Must have been your Triple J days. And I had to say in the end, you know, you're with the comedian, all right? Yeah. Stop mentioning, because he moved on to Mighty Boosh after that, but you guys were it for a while.
They were good.
They were very funny.
We did a lot, and with that duo, it was.
How long were you with Merrick for?
Benson and I did. Oh God, we must have done 14 years or something.
Is there pressure on you guys to do a reunion? There must be, because you're in that classic spot now where your fans would be, 40s, 30s, 40s. And they've probably had kids.
Yeah, and
they're ready to go out for one night. You know what I mean? To buy their tickets to go to a nice theatre.
There's a lot of pressure.
You're
already thinking about the t-shirt.
There's no pressure on Osso Booker to get back together.
No, it's
my double act.
It's fine. Like we were doing one of those, you know, podcasts together a little while ago, and it's interesting how easily you can.
Merrick?
Slip back into the old gear,
the old way,
which is fun. But the
how did you get into architecture? How did you get?
So you know, I'd always collected furniture, and you know, I've always been a weird.
Your
guy.
Dad, I've and been dad, to your yeah. dad's. Furniture yeah, warehouse so, in Tyab.
He's been Tyab.
I've been there. There's photos of you.
Yeah.
Because yeah, my wife's a, you know, she's a big
she collects
fan things. Of, you know, we've got a lot of stuff. And anyway, we went there once and she goes, "There's photos of Ross over here." Yeah. I went, "Oh my God, this must be her dad's." Warehouse.
So dad was a crazy old antiques dealer. And then, I suppose I bought a, you know, 1950s house, and I started going. It was while, you know, I was doing breakfast radio, and it really became my other life. I didn't really know anyone else who was into it, and I'd go to all these open days, and I just started getting into this sort of. And then,
because when I first met you, you never brought up architecture. Not that I'm into it.
But
my partner sort of is. Yeah, so I hear about
and
it.
So it was, and then it just sort of, and I really wanted to make a series about Australian modernism, modernist architecture. And that took me forever to do, but it became, and then it just overtook my life. And then we started doing this Man About the House show. We didn't really know how it was going to work, and we sort of, it sort of started working, and Instagram drove.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, right.
And so we created a new audience, and so
because as you're pointing out here, the people here in the BT Tower are here probably because of the BT Tower.
Yeah, I'm quite happy for that. Yeah. And then you just sort of... and so I created a whole new audience through Instagram and new in the early days of Instagram. And they sort of design like... People like design or like architecture. And a lot of those people might have listened to me on Triple J. Probably didn't ever listen to me on Nova or watch anything I'd done on TV. So it's a new audience.
Yeah.
And so we got to sort of start afresh and then... And Kit and I had always... We'd done music a lot together over the years.
Yeah, we always had some sort of project sort of bubbling away right far in the background. But we'd purely just to... Because Black Rose was like... We had so much fun. And that we... Black Rose was... We were share housing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was...
hey, how are you? Someone's just walked in.
Yeah.
No, just doing interviews. So
two random men just walked into our green room.
What was the Brown Eye reference?
Oh, brown eyes when you moon someone, you know, flash your
That's
eyes.
An Australian term.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sorry,
That's a really good point.
Last night I self-checked it, but I thought, I
stopped drinking my champagne at that point.
Yeah.
Good, good work.
Thanks, gents.
No problem. Fans of the show just wandered in.
Yeah, just a couple of fans, but yeah, like...
What's a brown eye? How funny is that? That's an Australian term, obviously.
Yeah, and...
Because you're both very Australian, but you're still, the show was... international enough for everyone to get it.
Yeah, and you just forget sometimes, and then you go through all sorts of things that you change for.
Yeah, you wouldn't say the word Tang tonight.
For yeah,
instance. Oh, Tang, great drink.
Yeah,
great drink. I do love all the references, of course, of the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, so and then you realise how much some of your material and like there's so many things that we normally do on a show, that songs or bits and pieces that you know that we'd love to do but just don't make sense here.
Do you find though, because I mean, I was saying to you guys before, the way you've got it set up in the BT Tower, it's actually a really, like, it's a little auditorium kind of thing. It's actually not a bad shape for a comedy room because they're all squashed in. Do you find some places you go to are just hard to? Because you know the thing about comedy is that it should be done in a theatre, basically.
Whenever we can turn a house into the closest to a theatre-type environment. But what has been really interesting for us as performers is getting used to performing, again, to really small audiences.
Yeah.
And it's really good for your skills.
I can see that, yeah. You can make a connection.
A lot of the time there's no backstage, so we talk to everyone the whole time.
Yeah, we're just there. And a lot of time also we don't use a PA system. So
that
was incredibly confronting when we first
started. Yeah, no mics at all.
No mics at all. And
easy setup, though.
Yeah,
it's a really good. I love the load.
You used it tonight. Yeah, you used it tonight. But
yeah,
we did. And we do more and more because it's sort of...
A bit bigger.
Yeah, but like it's very confronting. You sort of realise how much you rely upon the microphone as like a sort of a barrier between you and the audience, and it just helps.
I liked when we stopped for a reason. We were doing a show at a house and then they didn't want amplified music and we had to stop it. We had to get rid of it. And, you know, going back to all that time in the 90s when you start out and it wasn't easy, I don't reckon. You know,
no.
It was pretty... And so, like,
it's easier now.
It's like, and then like people were pretty rough, and so the microphone, you gotta get a little. I used to find that, you know, as soon as you put your hand on the microphone, you get a bit Henry Rollins, and you're like, it's like you against the world.
That's right. And that's because you grew up in pub comedy like me. It's a similar thing.
And so if you get rid of that, it suddenly it evens it out a bit,
it
made me a much more open performer because you didn't realize it's like this the tension that goes on because as soon as you pick up the mic, you get into a stance and you go, how are we going to go here? And we're in hand. No one ever heckles us.
No.
Or it's not. They're all
heckles.
No, it's really friendly. Yeah. But, you know, you sort of... Your mental memory for these things and sort of...
Well, it's not free to get in or anything. So, and the prices are probably reasonably well priced.
Yeah.
So that turns away a lot of people, I'd say. That you know, that's the problem with free gigs is that people heckle because there's no investment.
They don't care.
But actually, some of my favourite bits were when you guys did actually work together. And now realising that you were in Black Rose with Rosso, that's why you've been working together for about, must be 25 years then.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Pretty close to it. Getting there.
My God.
Yeah, we're actually getting pretty good at it now.
No, it's good.
It took for a while.
I was asking you before we started, how many shows like this have you done? How many Man About the House?
So this is our fourth year of coming to London for the London Festival of Architecture, which has been and continues to be a great experience. But... You know, I don't know how we just.
What have you done? You would have done over 100 shows together, though. Series, easy.
Yeah. All over the place, but we just, you know, it's because we pretty much specialise in non-traditional venues, and that's like last we had a couple of weeks ago in Adelaide. We're in this sort of brutalist building that's was going to be demolished, and it's been empty for 20 years, and so we set that up into a temporary theatre. People like that experience.
Where was that in Adelaide?
In Port Adelaide, yeah.
In Port Adelaide?
Yeah. It's sort of... It's a cool experience. People just... They like different things.
Do you always choose modernist or brutalist? Not that I know much about architecture, but have you ever done colonial?
No.
Have you done Edwardian?
Yeah, we probably have. I mean...
Do you always steer towards modernism?
We do a lot of new houses, which sometimes they're not easily classifiable. If people are interested to go inside them, we'll choose them.
Yeah.
So,
I think you made a great point in your stand-up, in your show, where you're saying as a kid there was always a house where you would ride past on your bikes and go, I want to go in there. It's because I reckon everyone had a flashback at that point when you said that, where you go, oh yeah, because there was a house near us that was like fantastic. Like it must have been a modernist house.
So, yeah, because as that person who as an adult would go to an open day where, you know, they'll open up some 1960s house, and I'd go in and it'd be great, but you'd be there for 5 minutes, and it's a bit like an open house when you go to buy a house.
Yeah.
And I always thought, well, imagine if I could come to this house and have a drink and feel like I'm at a house party and see a show.
Great.
And so that's really the essence of it. And
the Brady Bunch house, that must have been modernist.
Yeah, that was very much a modernist house.
Yeah, that's what we all aspired to as kids.
The doors here.
Someone else keeps trying to break in. Oh, here's a security guy.
Hello.
Performers,
yeah?
Performers. Yeah.
Okay, cool. That's good. That's
Secure. That's good?
Thank you. We don't want to have anybody else.
Wandering in, no.
On this floor.
No, okay. Okay. No, it's just that's us. Cool. Thank you.
We'll keep an eye out.
Thanks.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. All right, well, we should wrap it up, I suppose. I should ask you the questions that I always ask. Oh, we should mention your TV show, too, because I watched that on a plane. I thought it was fantastic.
Thanks, buddy.
And I did tweet you and say that I loved it, and you tweeted back. Because it took me a while to watch it.
Yeah, a lot of people watch it on the plane.
Yeah, so. And you said, don't worry, my dad hasn't watched the second episode yet. So
he has now. Yeah.
It's so typical of a dad. Oh, yeah, no, I'll get around to it. Don't worry about it. It's all right. No, it's pretty good. Pretty good. But so that was a great, for people who don't know, it was a series about modernist architecture where you went to Palm Springs.
And the evolution of the Australian suburbs and how, you know, and we had, I suppose, said some of the best architecture in the world.
And I did a gig in Wagga Wagga and I met the guy. I met your mate.
Yes.
Whose house you went in, he said, mocked. I go, yeah, I remember you at the McMansion, the massive. He goes, yeah. He lives in Wagga, obviously, still. And
it was hard for Adam, I think. Always his beautiful wife, because I said, can we come? They just wanted to. And I never really classified his house in the McMansion. That was the producers. You know what they're like, chasing TV.
Yeah, they just want catchphrases and
all that stuff.
Something
and
to hook onto.
To me, it was. We went to, you know, regional Australia and see how people live. And Adam described the things like, we never use the front door. We drive in through the garage.
Yeah.
There's no connection to the street, all that sort of stuff.
Yes. That's so true, though.
I'm trying to unpack why we live the way we do and what we're scared of. Why do we have to hide ourselves away? And
it's so true, because one of my friends moved from, I live in Clifton Hill, and she moved to Kew, right, or Ballin. And she said it's so different because in Clifton Hill, you're forced to park on the street because hardly anyone has a garage. And so you're forced to talk to your neighbours. You see people, but she's sitting in Kew and Ball and everyone just goes, drives in the driveway, goes underground. She says, you never see anyone.
Yeah, and a friend of mine is an architect. He's got this great saying. So when people talk to him about he's designing people's houses and they, you know, where they want the garage. And he said, Homer Simpson drives in through the garage, James Bond parks out the front.
That is fantastic. And also, I should just mention, I also really like the way that you were, in some of the show, you were quite serious about architecture because you're passionate about it.
Yeah, I think people...
I think people expect a bit of that.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, it's hard because, you know, as a comedian, a big chunk of the show is still about telling stories and telling jokes. But Kit was really good, sort of going, talk more about it, you know, be brave enough.
Oh, you encouraged him?
Yeah. Oh, I think so, yeah.
Because I think people don't mind that at all.
I think people love that part of the show. Yeah, because it's...
Because also you're a bit of an authority on it. See, I'm sitting there going, I don't know much about it. When you talk, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, I get it. And I reckon most people would be like that, unless they're an architect.
Yeah, and you know, like, I've seen more of it. I haven't had those conversations, but I see a bit of it on the, you know, the Facebook bookie stuff with the comics and... You know, there's a certain, you know, style of comic who goes, oh, it's not a fucking TED Talk or whatever it is. And I just think the barriers, and certainly as of someone who's in their 40s who's doing information-based comedy, I don't really care. I know that the audience really likes it.
Yeah.
The audience really responds to it. And so if they didn't like it, they wouldn't come along. And the world's sort of changed and like people like the intersection between information and humour.
It's true.
And I'll do talks now, which are funny, but like I spent a year touring a show called Design Nation, which was a slideshow about Australian
industrial
design.
Yeah, you did Acme, didn't you?
History of stack hats and all sorts of stuff. And it's like, it's just tell our history and tell us why we're good at something. Or like, for me, it's about, we've got a rich design history in this country, or not, we're not in this country now, in Australia. And we've always been great innovators, and we've forgotten how to be great innovators.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's cool stories out there, and people like to see our history, our culture, presented in an interesting way.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Now, I ask everyone these questions on my podcast, The Debrief. What went well tonight and why, you reckon, guys? What went well in the show? Was there a highlight? I don't know. I did think they liked the bits of your architecture when you, and also you sang a song about the BT Tower, which is a nice touch.
That
was a nice touch.
The hardest thing was getting. I mean, without getting really boring, and I know people who probably listen to this don't subscribe to the same things that we do. So our show's very. The essence, obviously, is Australian. It's about the suburbs, and because I've been here a few times, it's about connecting the experiences that are very Australian to the experiences.
Oh, okay. Well, that can lead to the next question. What didn't go well? So is it... Well, the guy didn't know what a brown eye was. He just came in.
So sometimes you're just not as prepped as you want. There's some things that don't go well. But, it's just... You just got to... You know that this is an audience and there's maybe four Australians, which is really...
Yeah, there weren't many Australians.
There was a few that maybe had been before. I didn't recognise anyone had been before. So it's a whole new audience. And you just got to trust in your material.
Yeah.
And know that what we do is people respond to.
Were there any organisational hazards got in the way? That's my other question I always ask. Like, is it hard doing a show here? Like, in terms of the organising of it?
Yeah, it takes a lot of work because you've got to get everyone's bloody... Because the IRA tried to blow this building up in the 80s, you've got to get everyone's... They've got to bring their licences, you've got to get their date of birth and stuff. And the first year, I was doing it all, emailing everyone myself.
Oh, nightmare.
Now we've got a producer who does that stuff. But
that's a hazard, yes.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, like some of the things, some of the bits always fall flat or there's something. Like we don't swear a lot in this show.
No, you don't swear a lot, no. But you swore once or twice.
Yeah, and so the swearing sometimes doesn't go down very well in our show. And I used to swear, and I swear as a human being. I said the C word before on this thing. I don't know whether you bleep that out or not.
No, it doesn't matter. Good. It's a podcast.
You might have some...
It doesn't matter.
We just sort of found, didn't we? And we did a show last night, and I swore early on, and they didn't like it. I don't know whether you remember.
I do, yeah.
Oh, there's an older crowd.
Yeah.
I don't know what Brits are like with swearing. I haven't done a gig for a long time, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I just think older crowds don't respond to
it. No, they don't. They don't like it. We should mention your motel show, too. So you did a bit of a song tonight, which was great, about the motel. You're doing that in... All around Australia, right?
Yeah. So that's our new show, and it's been a ripper of a show, isn't it?
Yeah, we opened that in Sydney earlier on in the year, and set up at a great motel, and it just flew, and people. It's a good experience because you're coming into an original motel, so you're sort of re-engaging with a lot of memory that a lot of us, not everyone, but would have. Of sort of family memories of going on sort of holidays and stopping in these places. And people are there for about an hour and a half and they get the show, but they get to sort of be back in the environment again. And it's a good experience.
My wife still talks about the one time they went to a motel.
Yeah.
And she goes, I remember we got room service. I'm like, no, that's just your breakfast getting delivered. Getting your rice bubble.
Yeah.
Still, as a kid.
It was huge. And so those collective memories that we have. And so we tapped really on it. And we'd written a song called Motel and had all those things in it. We'd been playing it for a couple of years. And that when I thought, because we do different venues, let's get into some motels and do it. And we do all these art installations that go with it too, just to sort of continue this exploration of doing interesting things. And we did the show and then suddenly it's like, Jesus, people really like that. And it was really early on. I think it was the first or second night in the season. I was like, "Oh, this really connects," and you don't always know that it's going to.
No, yeah,
and we
know.
We were really surprised by it that it resonated with people, and we were not scared to be incredibly sentimental with it.
Yeah, no, that's what you got to do. Exactly.
And so it doesn't have oodles of stand up in it,
talk about the jug.
We talk about the jug.
The jug.
It's got all that stuff in it. People just sort of, the jug. And families come along and,
love it.
You know, we get a few oldies come along, some youngies, and not a whole lot. It's good fun.
Ah, excellent. What's next then? Have you got another idea for you don't have to say it on this podcast. I'm trying to think of other things off the top of my head. Garages.
Garages.
What else was big growing up in terms of architecture? It's interesting. There's not that many things. Pools, but, no. Anyway, we'll stick to motel. Well, guys, thanks for having me.
Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you, guys. You go. And check out the motel. Go to timross.com.au.
Yeah, that'll do it.
That'll do it. And have a look. All right. We're seeing the BT Tower. It's pretty awesome. Enjoying the view. All right, security guard's still talking over there. Yeah, thanks, mate. Thanks for the bit of the chit-chat in the background. That'll be it. It's Atmos. All right.
Thanks, Dave.
You've been listening to the debrief. Thanks, guys. Tim Ross and Kit Warhurst. We should play a song again on the way out, Kit.
Yeah.
Now you've heard Kit talk. Here's him singing the song, the theme to this podcast. Here he goes.